talked many times on this show about people getting in trouble at work for blogging about their job or saying something to the boss they shouldn't have or having a bumper sticker on their car that the boss didn't like. Bruce Barry has written a book on exactly that subject. It's called Speechless, The Erosion of Free Expression in the American Workplace. He is a professor of management and sociology at the Owens School of Management at Vanderbilt University and the president of the Tennessee ACLU and went to high school with a very popular radio personality. Hi, Bruce. How are you?
Hi, Paul. It's nice to talk to you.
It's been a lot of years, hasn't it?
Who's the popular radio personality that you're referring to?
That'd be me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Welcome to the show. It's nice to have you on for the first time. And the book is a tremendous piece of work you've done here, and congratulations on that. People think that the First Amendment gives them the right to say anything, anywhere, anytime. But your book points out that there are a lot of instances, especially in the workplace, where that is not the case, right?
That's right. People have an overblown sense of the reach of the First Amendment. And there's a variety of reasons we can talk about on why it doesn't reach into the workplace, and it gets complex pretty quick. But the short story is that the First Amendment and the other wonderful rights provided in the Bill of Rights and the Constitution do not generally apply on private property. And most people work for private employers. And even when people work for public employers, for government employers, there are limits. So the reach of the First Amendment just isn't what people think it is.
Yeah, the Bill of Rights really protects us from the government, not from our bosses.
That's right. In the parlance of constitutional lawyers, there is this concept called state action, which means that, in simple terms, the Constitution applies, the Bill of Rights applies when the state acts. And for most people working for private employers, that's not the state acting when your employer tells you to shut up or shut it down or whatever.
There was a story recently about a guy named David Neudewyer who posted a joke on his MySpace page and thought it was just a bit of crude but, you know, funny joking around. His bosses at Walmart didn't think it was all that funny. He wrote on his MySpace page, "The average IQs of Walmart shoppers and the whole country would probably go up if a bomb were dropped on every Walmart." Now, he worked at a Walmart when he wrote that, but he says, hey, it's my own blog. They said, you're fired.
Well, some of the most interesting extreme cases are when employees get in trouble with their bosses, with their employers, because they engaged in speech off work that had nothing whatsoever to do with the employer. But the employer just happened not to like your flavor of civic involvement or political activism.
So you've seen a lot of other examples like that?
Well, but this example is a little bit different, the Walmart example you're mentioning, because I'm not going to claim that his speech had nothing to do with his employer. He chose to use private off-work expression to, insult his employer or to offer an insulting comment about the customers of his employer. And that puts it in a little bit more of a gray area in the sense that it's at least mildly understandable that his employer was interested in this speech and noticed it and perhaps was thinking about doing something about it. To me, the operative question becomes, okay, well, what should they do about it? Should a corporation like Walmart have a sort of a thick skin that this is an off-work employee blowing off steam that doesn't really affect the corporation? Or should they regard this as a sort of a serious threat to the company's image, reputation, and brand? And a lot of what I talk about in the book is about these kinds of cases that fall in this sort of middle area. I think these are the interesting cases. Now, my own view is that employers should, generally speaking, have a pretty thick skin about this stuff, and not in a knee-jerk sense regard it as an imminent critical threat to corporate image and reputation.
The first story that you tell in the book is about a woman who was fired for having a Kerry bumper sticker on her car back in 2004, and her boss was a Bush supporter. And if I recall the story correctly, he essentially said, either the bumper sticker goes or you go.
Yeah, he said to her, if you like John Kerry so much, maybe you should go work for him. And, of course, the nice irony outcome to it was that her firing got a lot of media attention, and the next day John Kerry called her and actually offered her a job in his campaign. Of course, on the downside, that didn't work out in the long run. But it was a kind of a nice short-term outcome. That's a great example, but it's an extreme example. I mean, most people that I've talked to hear about that example, and they're just sort of stunned that this can happen in America. And, in fact, when you dive into the complexity of the law, it turns out it can't happen everywhere in America. That woman would have actually had some legal recourse had she lived in another state. There are some states with some protections for political activity and political speech against employer punishment. She was not fortunate to live in such a state. She was in Alabama and really didn't have any recourse. But that's an extreme example. It's important because it defines the breadth of the territory here. But at the same time, I'm not going to argue that people all over America are being fired for their bumper stickers.
So there is no blanket protection for political speech, particularly if it's political speech off the job. Could a boss in most states of the country fire somebody because they went to a political rally for somebody that they didn't like?
I'm not sure I'd go as far as to say most states. I mean, the laws really vary. A lot of this is covered by a sort of a hodgepodge of employment law and other sorts of protections that are really embedded in state law rather than federal law. And so and there are also, there's another set of laws that vary from state to state that just generally protect off-work behavior, not necessarily political behavior, but sort of any off-work behavior that is legal and has nothing to do with the employer. There are some states that have protections for that. So the answer to your question is there are many states where one would be protected from being fired for just simply going to a political rally, but probably an equal, if not greater, number of states where you really don't have protection.
Has all of this had a chilling effect on American employees?
Well, my argument is that it does. I mean, you know, we talk about these sort of sexy examples where somebody's fired for a bumper sticker or for blogging. And I'm not going to make the claim that, you know, thousands or tens of thousands of people are being fired for their bumper stickers and their blogs. But every time somebody is, or every time an employer does come down hard on employee speech, it clearly, to me, sends a chilling message to everyone else. Watch what you say. Your employer is paying attention. Your employer may have a kind of a hair trigger for punishment for expression that it just kind of, for some reason, doesn't like. And I think this really, and when you combine that with the changing nature of employment in America, less job security, shorter careers, people worried about moving around, employers, companies more concerned than ever with brand image and corporate image. And I think this all adds up to a kind of a stew of a chill on employment speech, to mix a couple of metaphors there, where I think people really do become cautious. And by the way, Paul, that, you know, that cautiousness is not just, oh, well, so people have to do their speech after work or they have to be careful or something like that. I mean, I think it really matters because work is where people develop not just their professional selves, but also their personal selves and their civic selves. And I think community involvement, civic engagement, and indeed democracy itself suffers if people fear that civic engagement collides with employment security.
So do you think employers are getting more restrictive, or do you think employees have been pushing the boundaries more?
Well, that's a good, well-formulated question, and I think I'd say a little bit of both. I think there are certain forces that I think are impelling employers to be a little more restrictive or at least a little more vigilant about threats to the brand, threats to corporate image. Corporations become more politically involved. I think they worry more about departures from what we might sort of refer to as their preferred point of view. Clearly, mixed in here are increased abilities for employees to express themselves. Now, I mean, in some sense, we're talking about some kinds of expression that are not new, right? Kvetching about one's coworkers and one's boss and one's workplace and one's job is as old as the hills. And you know, there's nothing new there. But of course, what new technology is doing is providing people with avenues to engage in that age-old form of communication to much wider audiences more instantaneously. And that might, you know, suggest, well, gee, there's more speech going on. But of course, these same tools give employers the ability to police that speech, to find it, to seek it out, and to do something about it. And so I think that sort of is part of the erosion quotient, that chips away at people's free speech rights, whether employers really are being hypervigilant and really are firing people left and right is almost beside the point if employees perceive this chill and think that, you know, I have to be careful. My job may not like my speech.
You were talking about employers paying attention to what people are saying on the job and off the job more, and there's a lot more care that has to be taken. You hear articles all the time about human resource people keeping an eye on your emails and all sorts of internal stuff. And is that starting to turn against the American worker only because technology is allowing them more opportunities to say things that normally would have been said during a coffee break in the hallway?
Well, I think that, you know, when we talk about technology and how employers use it to watch what workers are doing, we're talking about free speech and free expression, yes, we're also talking about privacy rights and issues of privacy. I don't know if the technology is expressly to blame, but clearly a lot of employers regard the technology as creating threats to their own effectiveness, efficiency, corporate success, and they're worried about how employees are using these tools. Now, you know, some of this is monitoring employees for just sort of goofing off, right? Let's monitor their email use or their internet use to make sure they're not just sort of engaging in recreational activities on work time. And that kind of, you know, by itself, I'm not sure that kind of monitoring, at least, you know, in the abstract, poses some sort of threat to free speech. But when you look at it more closely, I worry that it does. People use communication tools at work sort of just like they use them anywhere else, to communicate, often for personal reasons, not work-related reasons, but that's part of life. You know, you can't make an appointment with your doctor unless you call the office during business hours. And people use email and other forms of technology for the same thing. Now, when an employer decides we're going to monitor what people do because we're worried about people goofing off or wasting resources, that's their sort of right. They own the network. They own the equipment. But what is it they're really doing with the information they find? Because with the good intention of trying to lessen people's goofing off, they end up figuring out or have access to what people read, what kinds of personal communications people might be engaged in regarding health, regarding their kids' education, regarding who knows what. And so I think there are real threats here to workers that come from this monitoring. And by the way, we know that from some surveys from organizations like the American Management Association, that an awful lot of employees are doing this kind of monitoring.
Yeah, but you also have situations where it comes back to bite those employees when the management says, hey, you're sending inappropriate content, whether it's porn or a racy joke or a scandalous rumor about somebody else in the office. Where's the protection for those different levels of content?
Well, and I think that's where some interesting and difficult gray areas come in, because hey, I defend the right of employers to worry about that kind of stuff and to shut it down when it's egregious. I mean, there's no reason they should have to tolerate employees sending around stuff that's obscene or abusive or harassing, of course. And they, you know, when you start talking about harassment, you also start raising questions of employers being liable for litigation, stuff like that. But the gray areas come when employers start to make naturally some judgments about what crosses the line and what doesn't. Or when employers say, well, I'll tell you what, we won't even deal with those gray areas and figuring out where the line draws. We'll just say, engage in no communications whatsoever that are non-work related, that are personal in nature. And I think that's unrealistic. But if you are going to try to be reasonable, you're going to have to deal with some gray areas. You know, one person's obscene or harassing joke might be another person's edgy, biting sarcasm.
Yeah. A listener named Jeff sent an email to Paul Harris at KMOX.com. He says, please ask your guest, could someone be fired for going to an open mic night, getting up on stage, and telling racist jokes?
The simple answer is yes, in the sense that you can be fired for anything. I mean, if you are somebody who works at will, that is, without an employment contract, without a union contract, most American workers are so-called employment at will workers. You can be fired for any reason or no reason. You can be fired from going to an open mic night and reading the Bible. Although, actually, it gets complicated with the Bible. Maybe that's a bad example. But for reading the novels of Jane Austen out loud.
Well, you should be arrested for that.
Well, yeah.
Let's make it Harry Potter.
You're right, it depends how you're dressed as well. but there are actually examples of the email is raising actually quite an interesting example. If you work in the private sector for a private employer, I mean, the simple answer is yes, you can be fired for that or for sort of reading anything. But there have been some interesting cases where public sector employees who have some more rights because the government is their employer and the Bill of Rights does sort of apply, government employees have done kind of what the emailer is describing. There was a case out of Baltimore some years ago where a police officer, public employee, liked to go. His recreational activity was doing basically Al Jolson shtick in blackface for money at local clubs.
And as Ted Danson proved, that doesn't work.
Right. Well, this guy was fired by the police department, and he sued claiming, you know, what I'm doing is performing. It's a form of artistic expression. It may not be everybody's sort of taste in artistic expression, but it's artistic expression, and since I'm a public sector employee, a police officer, I should have the legal right to do this, essentially First Amendment protected. And he won his case, because the court said that indeed, yes, it's for many people unsavory expression, but it is artistic expression, and it is protected because you're a government employee.
I'm Paul Harris, talking with Bruce Barry. He was one of the smart guys in my high school graduating class. He's now a professor of management and sociology at Vanderbilt University and president of the Tennessee ACLU, author of a new book called Speechless, The Erosion of Free Expression in the American Workplace. Bruce, we've seen some erosion in the American labor movement over the last decade or so. How are unions doing in protecting their members when it comes to free speech questions on the job?
Yeah, more like erosion over the last two or three decades. And, I mean, the answer there is sort of mixed. In the sense, in one sense, they do just fine. That is, when you have a union and you have a union contract, the one thing you do have with that, and the real underlying issue in a lot of this, is due process. I mean, what a collective bargaining contract with a labor union gives you is protection against that idea of being fired for no reason or a silly reason. And so people in labor unions have the right to file a grievance and have a kind of a just cause protection. They can't be fired for just sort of silly, irrelevant speech. But, of course, that protection doesn't mean a whole lot if fewer and fewer American workers are unionized. And we know that in the private sector, the percentage of the American workforce that's unionized is now down in single digits, still a good bit higher in the public sector, but obviously weak and declining. So for those people who are in unions, there's protection, but that's fewer and fewer people.
And, of course, the real tough part about this is if you're an American worker and your boss tells you you're fired, you're out of there. Yeah, you can go get a lawyer and you can take them to court, but that's going to take time. That's going to take a lot of expense. And I'm guessing that your employer is probably going to have more in his checkbook than you have in yours. And so it's a tough battle to fight. Have there been significant victories over the last 10, 20 years that haven't cost people everything they've had?
I'm not sure I can think of any. I mean, by victories, you mean victories for workers?
Yes.
I mean, where we see them tends to be more in the public sector. And in fact, where cases become prominent in the courts tend to be the ones involving government workers. Over the last 40 years or so, this issue has reached the U.S. Supreme Court maybe a dozen times, virtually always involving a public sector case. And some of those, the employee has been victorious. I mean, one of the most important ones was not the last 10 years, but was actually in the late 1960s, but it's a telling case. It was a school teacher in Illinois who wrote a letter to the editor of his local paper complaining about school board policy, and he was fired for insubordination. He sued, and ultimately in the U.S. Supreme Court, he won a very important case establishing the principle that public employees, like school teachers, do not give up their rights to free speech when they go to work. And so there are examples like that. But your question and the point behind your question, you know, certainly remains that it's expensive, it's costly, it's a hassle. The employer you're suing probably has a lot more resources and a lot more inclination to persevere in court than you do. And if you do potentially have a case, even in the private sector, because there's one of these, you're in a state with a pretty good law, for example, almost all of these laws say to judges, you can balance the employer's free speech, the worker's free speech claim, against the employer's business efficiency claim or need for harmony, efficiency, business success. And what we see, and what some legal scholars who have really looked at these cases more closely than I have noticed, is that courts tend to buy the employer's argument. They not always, but they do tend to buy the efficiency argument that employers make, and so they really put employees at a disadvantage, even when they have a legitimate case.
You mentioned a case involving a teacher. What about students? I know technically it's not their workplace,
right,
but what happens to their free speech rights, particularly if somebody makes a video about school and posts it on YouTube or writes about it on their MySpace page or even is just writing some thoughts down in their own classroom and passing it to somebody else at lunchtime, and it has to do with the school or a teacher or the principal?
Sure.
Do they have any rights at all?
Well, we have to make two divides there. The one we've already been talking about, which is the divide between public and private. So are you at a public school or a private school? You private property, private school, you pretty much have no rights of free expression. Public school, public institution, the state is acting when it shuts down your speech. But then the other divide we have to make is what level of student. Primary, secondary, that is high school or lower, versus university or above. And that matters because the courts do give greater discretion, not surprisingly, at secondary school levels and below, to administrators to interrupt speech or interfere with speech that they perceive as disruptive. Whereas once you reach a university level, there's a much higher standard for an institution to shut down, a public institution to shut down speech. So bottom line, if you're a high school student and you do kind of as your example suggests, your rights are quite limited, even though you're in a public school. And there's this, you're familiar with the Bong Hits for Jesus case.
Yes.
That's before the Supreme Court right now. They haven't decided it yet. Decision's going to come down in the next few weeks. That's a case of a high school student engaging in speech, actually not while in school, during a school field day where they were off from school for a field trip, engaging in speech that the school didn't like, and the school took action against the student.
Even though it was off school property, that's a very interesting case. I'm looking forward to finding out what the court's going to say about this. You got any prediction?
Well, it seems like, based on the accounts I read of the oral arguments, it seems as though the court may be sympathetic to the free speech argument, but not very much. I think there's a pretty good chance they're going to say this falls within the school's prerogative. I hope they don't, but I think it's possible that this current court will give the school that much prerogative to shut down speech.
I was about halfway through your book when I got to a section, put a smile on my face just for the heading, Speech Related to Nothing in Particular. Now, what is that?
Well, that's a section where, in the part of the book where I'm trying to just get at the law and answer the question, is there free speech or not? And what I find is that there are a couple of states, just a couple, and they happen to be Connecticut and South Carolina, that actually have broad-based laws that seem to protect employee speech, even in a private sector job, on just about anything. That is, it's a law, the Connecticut law says, it's only slightly paraphrasing to say that the Connecticut law says that the First Amendment applies in the private sector workplace. It's sort of the Nirvana law for employee free speech. But the problem, as I go on to say, is the one I just referred to a couple of minutes ago, that when a case on that law actually comes to court, the court is invited to balance the employer's perceived needs for efficiency and harmony at the workplace with the employer's free speech claim, and more often than not, the employer wins and the worker loses.
Well, the book is a fascinating read, almost a primer for people who want to know what they can and can't do on the job, and I'm guessing a lot of HR people are going to have to read this to find out what they may not know about what their own employees can do on and off the job, depending on whether that job's public, private, or on and on and on. There's so many different angles on this. I appreciate you taking the time to talk about some of them here this afternoon.
My pleasure to be here.
Bruce Barry, professor of management and sociology at the Owen School of Management at Vanderbilt University and the president of the Tennessee ACLU. The book is Speechless, The Erosion of Free Expression in the American Workplace. This is the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.